Hello everyone,
Yes.
welcome to the Love Fruit podcast, and I'm your host Ronnie Smith, and I have a great guest today, Raphael Resch, who is, I believe, in Germany right now, originally from Austria. And I met Raphael at the UK Fruit Fest last year, but I also then attended the festival that he put on in Austria, which was a wonderful time for everyone. And he's going to be having that again in September, so we'll talk a little bit about that. But Raphael, I would like to find out more about you. So would you like to give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself?
Yeah, sure.
By the way, for those watching on video, beautiful background you've got.
Yes. Like a couple of, maybe 2 kilometers behind these houses, there is the border of Germany. And what you actually see, the mountains back there, that's Austria. So, and this is the balcony of my mother's. And yeah, I thought this would be pretty cool place to do the interview. Yeah. Yeah, my name is Raphael Resch. I'm the oldest son of a vegan chef. I grew up vegan and also grew up with this whole atmosphere of my parents doing health talks, doing cooking classes, doing, yeah, and my father cooking in several cooked vegan restaurants all over the world. One of them was in London, actually, Country Life London.
Wow.
I don't know if you might have stumbled upon it. It was near near Piccadilly Circus. And yeah, so I grew up with all that. And I grew up with lots of experimenting from my father because, yeah, vegan was definitely not mainstream, definitely not in Europe in the early 80s and then all through the 90s. So that was what I grew up with when I left house to start my career as an engineer. I work in automotive industry, developing cars. I stopped being vegan for practicality reasons, basically. Went back to vegetarian. I never ate a lot of meat, so maybe in my whole life, maybe that's half a dozen meals at best, you know, that really not a lot of meat at all. And after like about, yeah, maybe it was even like 10 years with a vegan girlfriend, I came back to veganism again. Her motivation was mainly to be good to animals, but my motivation mainly is health, and it's just a better fuel for the machine. And for many years, I just thought, oh, this is the non plus ultra. It's the best you can do, and yeah, why bother with anything else? But then one day, my mother starts doing raw vegan, and all of us kids are like, "What are you doing? What's happening?" But even though she lost a little bit of weight, and she's not very big, and we kids were worried a bit, she did feel amazing, and she was really hyped up and enthusiastic about it and felt good. You could really see her thriving on it. And after half a year, she all gained her weight back. And that was the point when I said, oh yeah, maybe this is something for me too. And that was a little over 3 years ago. So ever since, I've started on this, and I'm fascinated enough to put on festivals. So,
yeah, very cool. Yeah. And so you were a vegan throughout your childhood.
Yes.
Interested in how, like, that's quite rare, actually. Still, you know, it's getting more common, but it's still quite rare to have someone of your age like that's went through that vegan childhood. So, how did your parents start off with a vegan diet and lifestyle?
Yeah, that's actually quite interesting too. So my father was dating my mom, and he would visit her ever so often. He was working as a chef, so And at that time, he was working in seasons. So he, for the whole summer, he would be up in the mountain. No, winter, I think. For the whole winter season, he would be up in the mountains at a resort, cooking just plain regular food. And then he would come back down and visit his girlfriend. And during one of these times, there was a kolpatra at the door of the parents from my mother, and he sold books on religion and on Christianity and on health. And so my grandma said, "Oh no, I'm not interested, but my daughter might be."
Are you saying it was a man that was going door to door selling books?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Like a self-employed man who was just living off that. And yeah, the end of the story was that my parents bought a lot of books from this man, not only on health, but later also on Christianity, on the Bible and on prophecy and everything. And that was basically also the start for my parents to join the Adventist Church. They grew up Catholic. But with the whole truth that they found out about vegan food, and they found out about healthy lifestyle, and not just that, but also, you know, being outside, that has a big influence upon your health, and fresh air and sunlight, and, you know, all these things. Yeah, and that's the time when my father said, "Okay, well, I'm a chef, I want to do this." And it's taken my parents a couple of years to fully transition to vegan, but they did it because they were convinced in their head first to do it, and then they really pulled through, which I highly appreciate that they did. Takes some courage to do that.
Yeah. That's excellent. And you mentioned that your dad was a chef, and your mom's a bit of a chef too, and they were teaching classes as well. So is that what you were saying? So how did that all happen?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit to raw veganism today. Veganism then was rare enough that people found it interesting just to listen to you know, talks about how does it work at all? You know, how can you eat without meat? How can you subsist without some eggs? I mean, for sure you will have to have at least some milk. So they would then, you know, learn themselves all the scientific details about that, you know, what does it actually mean, and work out these simple slides or simple workshops. And also my father would invent simple recipes or recipe systems, you know, where you with a system you could make many recipes. And they would go and be invited in many places to do that, mainly in small churches to start with, but then also later in bigger institutions like schools and like boarding schools who have a home kitchen and like old people's homes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's talk briefly about the Adventist Church, because it's something, a church I've been aware of that has this connection with healthy living and veganism. And I don't know how accurate that is. I've heard some people say that many people who are Adventist are vegan. I've heard people say that it's not as many as I might think. But certainly a famous community of people, Adventist community in Loma Linda, California, has been celebrated as one of the healthiest groups in the world, and definitely in America, for their longevity and
yes, life. Blue zone.
Yeah. And certainly Adventist Church seems to be connected with veganism, but is there as many people who are vegan or healthy in the Adventist Church as I might think, or is it just a small amount, or what do you think?
Well, I don't know how many you think, I guess, but and also I can only talk about those churches that I know. I don't have a global overview for sure, but
it's not like
Germany, Austria.
It's not a rule that everyone has to follow, is it? Or
generally, there is no such thing as a rule that everybody has to follow.
Okay.
In this Adventist church, it's all free will. It's all about being convinced about something or not. So that is something I very much appreciate about this place. There are many people, I would guess most people, sadly, do not follow veganism in church. So it would be maybe vegans. So Germany, Austria, maybe since the start of the pandemic, more. But generally, you would be lucky to find 20%.
Okay, I see.
So,
And the rest, are they more vegetarian or is it mixed?
There is a general consciousness of taking care of your nutrition and thus taking care of your health, because one of the founding people of this movement, called Ellen White, she wrote pretty much. And she had these special messages that she got in visions and dreams. And one of these messages was about the health message. Was basically, a dream telling her, listen, eating late at night is not a good thing. And eating meat should be stopped altogether. And for her, it was really hard because she was convinced she had to eat meat to have enough strength. She was a very frail lady. But after this vision, she stopped overnight just for pure willpower. She wanted to follow that. She thought, okay, if this is the right way to do it, let's do it. Anyway, a lot of other information followed, and basically what she recommends is that people have outpost centers, have centers in the nature, out in the countryside, big places where people can be healthy and teach other people to be healthy as well. And Loma Linda was one of those places that got started because of her,
right?
And because of those dreams. And there are many places like that all over Adventist world. I mean, sure, you know, people are people and there's lots of complicated issues, but the basic thing is that many people want to put that into practice. Some are more determined than others.
Right, I understand. You mentioned Ellen White, who was a pioneer and wrote a number of books on health and so on that have been celebrated. And do you want to let us know a little bit more about her?
Yeah, so I'll try to make a short package of the story. That the main thing was in the early 1800s, there were quite a lot of people all over the world who started studying Bible for themselves. They were from different denominations, so Baptists, Quakers, Methodists, all kinds of Christian denominations, people who just, you know, simple people who just started reading and started calculating with these prophecies of Daniel and Revelation, mainly those books, those two prophetic books, and started realizing, oh, there are certain things that if you calculate them correctly, and they did the calculations numerous times, you would arrive at a date somewhere 1844, 1843, first they thought, but then they found the mistake and it was 1844. And over time, these people got kicked out of their churches because of conspiracy theorism. And they didn't really want to start their own movement, but basically because they got kicked out, they did.
Right.
And this was basically the start of this Advent movement. That's how they were called from the outside, because they said, they wrongly thought that this date must signify the return of Jesus on this planet. They found out later that that was a misinterpretation of the numbers, But that was basically the start of this whole movement. So people came all together, people who just loved to find out truth. They were not interested in politics or policies or whatever. They just wanted to follow what is right. And so there were, even though they were heavily disappointed because Jesus did not come, obviously, a few of them still stick together. And from this remainder of people who actually stuck to it and said, okay, let's keep on reading, let's keep on searching for truth, started this movement. And after that point, then also came the information about health and about finding out about all these things.
Excellent. Yeah. So for you growing up vegan at the time, what was that like? Did you experience a lot of difficulty with that? Were people not very understanding of it? Did you have to learn how to communicate about it? What was that like?
Yeah, obviously you were always a bit of an odd kid out, you know, even among Adventists, yes. Because you know, people get all funny when they think that you do something well that they should do, you know, that kind of thing. So people get a bad conscience for no good reason, and then somehow you're responsible for their bad conscience. Now I understand a little bit better about that mechanism, but in those days, you know, you were just the odd one out. And so it was sometimes hard to get used to that. But sometimes I was also very proud to have a chef as a father, you know, who just made excellent food. So mixed bag, basically. But overall, the good memories are more than the maybe awkward ones, because especially those highlights were my father not only fascinated us with what he created, but actually made it possible that people who just ate regular food to be really fascinated about a raw vegan dish. That was basically his raison d'être, as his reason for being. It just fueled him, and we could all participate somehow from that motivation, from that fascination.
Very cool. And how was your health growing up? Did you experience good health as on a vegan diet growing up?
I don't remember many issues. I once had a little bit of an issue with an ear infection. That took a while. And as a teenager, sadly, I got my appendix removed. And just today, my mother told me that after that, sometime after that, my digestion also changed. So I complained, which before I never did, about a knot in my tummy.
Oh, wow. Apparently.
So, yeah, apart from these things, I don't remember that much, to be honest. I always liked eating. I always liked eating a lot as well. I would always finish the stuff from my brothers and sisters.
So,
I don't remember that much.
Yeah. So fast forward to your mother changing to raw vegan, and that was what stimulated you to look into it. How had she explored that? How had she found that?
Yeah, it was basically also an interesting thing, because the initiative was not from her side. She's got a good contact, a guy who is younger than me. She worked together with him in a certain situation. I don't even remember. I think it was in church in Salzburg, yeah. And so his mother is Brazilian, his father is Austrian. And so naturally, he would be in Portugal quite a lot. And that's also where he studied. And he had some good friends there. And his friends, they just built up a shop there with a new sanatorium all the way out there in the in the mountains of Portugal, a really pretty place. And so, because my mother was living alone and he was doing a holiday there and asking people who wants to join me to come down there. Yeah, there was a little group, including my mother, to go down there. And that's where they did some fasting and then some raw food. And also explaining everything that they found out. And generally just, talking about 80-10-10 and talking about Doug Graham and everything. That's where mm-hmm. she said, okay, I want to try this. And that's where she changched to do that. And then was enough to convince me to...
Who was running that retreat?
Lothar and Erschi Elisabeth. Lothar and Erschi Hirnkötter. That's the second name, yeah. It's a place in the middle of Portugal. Sweet little place. It's a small, like a private sanitarium, maybe space for 10, 12 people maximum. But like a homestay, a homestead, that's what you call it. With a big garden and it's secluded, bit up on the mountains. Very nice place, yeah. Yeah, and then almost a year later, a little more than a year later, I followed them with a group of people down there. And for myself also said, okay, I want to try this. I want to feel it, if it is worth anything.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how is that initial sort of transition? Did it happen quite quickly for you or did it take you some time?
Because I was convinced about it and because I wanted to feel if this thing is real or not, and also because I followed my mother for a whole year to see her progress and also to hear from her, oh yeah, it's normal to lose about 10 to 15% of your weight in the first half year because your gut reorganizes itself, but it regains at the latest after half a year. I was fairly confident, and so I switched overnight. I did the fast in Portugal. I broke my fast with raw veganism as a fruit-based, and so the next half year, I just followed through with that. Excellent. I did maybe a handful of exceptions maybe while traveling, but then also just vegan exceptions while traveling. But other than that, I just went cold turkey, because I knew that if you change, it's gonna be work. And yeah, I'm lazy. I don't want to work more than necessary. I'm an engineer, so I figured that would be cool to do, and that was my goal. Even if maybe with some exceptions, I might not have perfected it, but I was pretty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm content.
how many years ago was that?
3 and a bit. Yeah. Awesome.
And I think you also went to some events, some of Doug Graham's retreats and things like that. Is that right?
Not directly one of his retreats. So basically what I did is I came back from this fasting in Portugal. That was February. And that same year, 2018, in the summer, I was just looking, okay, where are these people that do this stuff, you know? And then I found out, okay, there's festivals doing this. And I found the Danish fruit festival near Copenhagen. And so I went there, also convinced my mother to come as well. And that's where we first heard Doug and also Rosalind and Grant and so on, but we didn't really connect personally with them. But it was enough for me to say, okay, this really has potential, also to find out about how to do this kind of food and so on. It really fascinates me, because I'm really fascinated about things of purity, things that are, you know, that are like original, the way it right. should be, or the way it works best, or you know, I'm fascinated about these things also professionally. And so I thought, okay, Raphael, what can you do with your holiday that you know brings me closer into that area? And so what I did is that I booked the culinary skills class with Doug in 2019, I think. I think it was 2019, autumn of 2019. And so I was there with Doug, and that being a much smaller setting, we also got a little bit to know each other, and Grant was also there and so on. That was really cool. We also learned a lot of stuff. That was very valuable for me to understand also the whole concept of how to make really high-end food for people who are not used to this, and to make it taste well. And then after that, obviously, we met in the UK. We did the UK Fruit Fest, also again with my mother, and that was last year, and then we did our own festival, yeah.
I was just going to say, quite early on, you did your own event, I think did you do an event in 2019 and then one in 2020 as well?
Yes, 2019 we did one because, even before we went to Copenhagen, we already had like a little WhatsApp group of people who were also very interested in this, but who couldn't afford or couldn't couldn't make the logistics of getting to Denmark as well to the festival. And so they said, okay, you come back and we make a festival and you just tell us everything. So this was basically the initiative of the first festival that we did, just bunch up in the cabin there that you already know now. And, it was just with us organizers, maybe 15 people. So it was not a lot of people, but we pulled all the stops, you know, we had people coming, going extra at that one day. Going extra down to Salzburg again to bring durian from the Asian shop, you know, pre-order. So that was pretty cool. And so 2020 was the second installment, and we were very, you know, unsure and also kind of didn't have the motivation to do one after all that whole pandemic stuff happened. And once we were in the UK and it actually did happen and it was glorious, it was really cool, we thought, oh, come on, now we'll really do it because it's worth it, you know, and let's really, you know, make the most of it. And we started inviting all those people that we knew from the health scene within Adventism, that we knew at least, people who personally connected with us. And a number of these people came, and also, a couple of people we didn't know, some people who came because Grant told them, and some people who just saw us on WhatsApp, on Facebook. And because next to your festival, it was pretty much the only one in Europe, we had quite an interesting selection of people there. It was quite awesome, yeah.
Yeah, a few of us went from the UK festival to go and see you in Austria, and it was great. It's really
that
nice
was awesome.
Time, and I loved the venue and the location, the general area. Wonderful place. Good food as well, for sure. And very family atmosphere, I think. I met a lot of great people. I really liked a lot of the people there, and got along with them very nicely. Something about, I don't know how much you know about this, in Germany, potentially Austria, I'm not sure, has a bit of its own history when it comes to natural hygiene, health. You mentioned the word sanitariums, and there's a number of people that came from Germany, I believe, mostly, that moved over to the United States and had an impact, and you know, their ideas spread. Do you know much about that? Have you got any interest in that or researched it at all?
The only thing I really know well about this one is Sebastian Kneipp. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Uh-huh.
He was a Catholic priest for sure. I don't know if he was even higher, but a priest for sure. Mm-hmm. And he would he would heal people with cold water. So he basically did hydrotherapy. Mm-hmm. Most of the treatments with just plain cold water, and he would treat a lot of things, a lot of diseases. And so my parents, when they stumbled basically upon this health message, they also came in contact with Sebastian Kneipp. And so we as kids actually grew up quite a lot with this kind of treatments. So when we had a cold, we would get mother would make a big t-shirt that was too large for us kids, but basically like a nightgown for us kids. And she would put it into cold water with a little bit of salt and barely wrang it out. So it was really soaking wet. And we would take off our clothes and we would get this, you know, wet t-shirt put on, and then very quickly put in the bed, wrapped with double blankets, and put with a hot water bottle at the feet, and then stayed in there for an hour. So the first maybe 5 minutes, if that much, was cold. But then it started getting warm and you started to sweat. And basically through sweating a lot, your body actually was able to get rid of quite a lot of stuff. So it was a pretty cool thing. And that was one of the things that were initiated about their research of Sebastian Kneipp and others. So it was, yeah.
Yeah,
that is something I appreciate. Yeah.
Yeah, and Arnold Erit, that a lot of people talk about, he was German background, I believe. And there was also a group there was a guy called August Engelhardt. I don't know if you ever heard of him, and he tried to start a fruitarian type of colony in Indonesia or somewhere. I think he was from Germany. He actually tried to live on coconuts. And this is a long. I think this is over 100 years ago. This is quite far back. And there was some people that went over to California as well, and they were the Nature Boys and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, so a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, so cool. So let me ask, what is your lifestyle like now, diet-wise? How do you approach raw vegan lifestyle?
I go shopping. So I go to mostly my Lidl near me, but basically it doesn't really matter if it's Aldi or Lidl or Edeka. Fruit and veg wise, the difference is maybe a little bit price wise, but quality wise is not much difference, in my experience anyway. Or if I'm lucky, I can also go to a Turkish guy where I can buy whole boxes. Turkish markets are great here. I don't know about you, if you also have some like smaller Turkish markets, but they're pretty awesome. Yeah, and then I pretty much spend like somewhere between 70 and 100 euros on fruits and veg and then haul it all home and then just make good food from them, you know, for maybe a week or 10 days, something like that. So that's basically my normal routine. And then I would just see, okay, what's ripe, what's really good. And over the last 3 years, I learned a lot about, you know, picking the ripe stuff, picking the good stuff, picking the stuff that actually tastes well. And you can find it in the most unusual places. It's quite amazing. I have found fresh dates in the Lidl, you know, because they had some kind of exotic thing that they... If you're lucky and your shop has a purchaser that has a little bit of passion, you can be actually quite lucky with buying stuff. Yeah, and then at home, I just really like to experiment a lot. So mainly two meals a day are quite simple. Just take fruit, what I have, and maybe some greens, but not that much. And then one meal where I have a little bit more time, I like to experiment because there's just so many variations you can do with salad sauce. So many things that you can do with vegetables, just preparing them differently. That this is my main hobby now, to find out new recipes and new things. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would maybe be a typical day be diet wise in terms of how much you eat, times, what exactly foods you eat? What would be a typical day for you?
Obviously it depends on season, but in the morning, I know that many people like to start days with melons, but that's fairly rare with me most of the time, because also from childhood I'm always used to a proper breakfast, big breakfast. I really like to start with lots of calories in the morning, so sweet fruit. I don't know, a kilo or even 1.2 kilos of grapes in the morning, or a whole blender full of bananas. That would be maybe 7-8 big ones. If they're smaller, maybe some more, or some less, and instead some dates mixed in, you know, just to make a morning like a porridge, if you will. Mm. And like in the khaki season, persimmon season, I would eat persimmons for breakfast pretty much every day, because that was pretty much the ideal food for me. it's sweet, it's got, you know, compact calories, and I really liked it. It's one of my favorites for sure.
Do you eat them it's very soft or a little bit firm?
I usually like them very soft.
Right, okay.
I do eat them firm as well, when you can still cut them in slices.
Yeah, I like that.
But I also really like either or, as long as they're sweet. But the juicy thing, I think I might prefer most of the time. So when they're like really, you know, almost flowing out of your hand.
Excellent. Yeah.
And then nowadays I have some mangoes as well. So I really like, if they're good, I really like monomials on mangoes as well. Like lunchtime. That's pretty awesome.
Did you notice any particular difference between your raw vegan lifestyle and your vegan diet?
Oh yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, even on the vegan diet, you sometimes have like a bit of a low after lunch, you know, not quite as pronounced if you, mm-hmm. as if you would do cheese or whatever, but you still have a bit of a low there. But also one of the advantages maybe of vegan food, and I guess that's also because maybe with raw vegan it will still take some time with me, is that lovely heavy feeling, as in, I'm full now, you know, this is really settled. You don't have that with raw veganism, and it's actually a good thing. But sometimes, at least emotionally, I miss that. I still need to, you know, I still need to lose that habit. But that's one of the things that there are different between raw vegan and vegan. What I also noticed quite a lot is that if you eat a vegan food, and I did many exceptions, so I know, with cooked food and nicely flavored food, when you eat it and you're not used to that, it's like a taste explosion in your mouth, and it's like, wow, this tastes amazing, you know. And you take the second spoon, and even already the second spoon is only maybe 95% as cool as the first one. And then the third spoon is just 80% as cool as the first one. And so it declines. If you eat a whole meal like this, at the end, it's like, it wasn't really worth it, because it's a bit of a one trick pony, that kind of taste. You know, it was like maybe 2-3 sensations in taste, which were strong and quite spectacular, but that's pretty much it. But with the raw food, it's exactly the opposite way. So with a raw dish, you might have the first spoon and you say, nah, it's okay. But like the third, fourth, fifth spoon, you would say, okay, I really like this. And that's when you start, you know, tasting nuances and tasting small things that you didn't before. And those small things, those nuances are pretty much missing completely in cooked food. And so one of the main motivations for me to stay on this path is also taste, because there is no better taste than in the raw stuff. And if you combine it well, if you make something really cool, it's actually the best thing that you can eat.
Absolutely. So you've got some plans this year to put on an event in Austria again. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your plans and what we can expect from it?
Yes. So this year, we're going to go to a bit of bigger venue. Quite a different setting. So we're going to a boarding school before season. So you will stay, if you come, you will stay in boarding rooms from the students. And they are maximum of 2 beds a room. And there is plenty of rooms. So there won't be shortage of rooms also for people who just want to stay alone in their room if they want to. It's quite a big campus, and it's got a nice modern big building where there is an upstairs big seminary room. That's where we will have all the talks. And then if you go down there, a short walk over campus, you will go to the old part of the campus, and that's where the canteen will be from the campus, and that's where we'll have our food. So it's really cool that the people there accommodate us, and also before season, the staff that lived there for the time of the festival will live completely raw vegan because of the kitchen just doing raw vegan. So it's pretty cool, and they're also quite hyped up about it. They want to learn, so the kitchen crew is quite happy to do this. And so yeah, I'm really confident that it will be a special mm-hmm. event there.
So when will it be? How can people hear about it, find out more?
Yes, it'll be from the 1st till the 5th of September. So the first 5 days of September. There is also a Facebook homepage, Festival Frische Früchte. And there as well, there is an event you can click on to if you want to. And you can also click the email button there, and then I will get an email. That's how you register for now. I'm completely maxed out working with some friends on a homepage, so that people can then also come to this homepage. That's also festivalfrischefruchte.at. But it's not ready yet, so they won't find a lot there. So the main way to do this is to write an email to me at rafaelresch@festivalfrischefruchte.at. You can post it in the link below.
Yep.
And that's also where they can sign up for a newsletter, and where they can. So I'll try to, especially coming up to the festival, I'll try to send a newsletter every fortnight, or then later every week. To inform everybody, and that way, yeah, we'll organize it.
Awesome. I mean, I hope I can come. I look forward to it.
Would be awesome.
I would definitely love to be there, and I know what a good time you put on and what good people you have with you, so I would look forward to that a lot, and that would be excellent. So just to finish off, I suppose, what kind of advice would you give people who are starting off?
I would give them the main advice I would give them is Unless they're really convinced I need to start this, then I advise them go cold turkey, go overnight and do everything. Do your homework first. You know what you're doing. But if you do not know what you're doing and you kind of want to try out first, you want to kind of, you know, hold in the toe, I would suggest to people that they simply start buying lots more fruit, have it at home. So I don't know, you know, go to the shops and spend 50 euros just on fruit and veg. I would encourage them, look at the stuff, take the best you can. And then when it's at home, try to take that stuff which is ripe and eat it before your normal meal. Eat as much fruit as you want from that and just enjoy it. And then eat whatever you eat after that. That would be my main advice to start off with. And as soon as you have like 3, 4, 5 meals like this, you will realize that your body actually likes that kind of thing. Your body will tell you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Raphael. And you're also going to be at the UK Fruit Fest this year.
Yes, yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and everyone can find out more at fruitfest.co.uk. And there are still spaces left. We are fairly limited in size this year, but we have a good group already and some spaces left for sure. And more news will come about that. You can join our announcement list at fruitfest.co.uk and hear more. What do you think is important about these events? And you seem to have you had a good time. It seems you find them quite special as well. What do you think it is about them that's special?
Well, I'm a bit of a social person, so as my type, basically, I appreciate being with people and learning new, as well, getting to know new people, making new friends. But even without that, so I also know some people who don't have that, but who still appreciate the festivals quite a bit. I think the really cool thing about festivals is that you meet people who are not just motivated by a new trend of some sort, mm-hmm. but who are actually interested in reading themselves, making their own homework, and doing something that's worthwhile. So basically people who just love truth, love stuff that's real, stuff that's, you know, I can read about it, and the stuff doesn't need advertising, the stuff doesn't need a lawyer. Truth always speaks for itself if it has enough light to actually see the whole matter. So those kind of people, they are the most interesting people you can find, because not only can you talk quite a lot about food and health with them, you can talk about numerous things with them and you will learn a lot. So even just if you say, okay, I don't know so much about this nutrition thing and raw food, but I'm interested in interesting people where I can learn, even then a festival like this would make a lot of sense, because there's a high concentration of these kind of people there.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing you more, and I encourage everyone to go and check out what's happening over in Austria. I think it'll be a beautiful, brilliant time. I personally think all the events I've been to that are raw vegan, fruit-based events have all been fantastic. I've loved all, and the people that have been attracted to it. It's always been great. I've always had great times at these events. It's one of my passions to try and get to these events. So I look forward to being there.
Yes, me too. I'm going to do the Dutch one too this year.
Awesome. Awesome. We should give them a shout out as well. So, thank you for joining me. And for everyone listening and watching, thank you for watching and listening this episode of the Love Fruit Podcast. Feel free to get in touch with us with any questions, info@fruitfest.co.uk. You can share this. We'd love it if you want to share it with a friend that might be interested in this information. We'd highly encourage you to do that. That'll support us. And if you've got any comments or questions, feel free to leave questions or comments below. If you found us on iTunes or Spotify. You can also watch on YouTube at the UK Fruit Fest YouTube channel, which you can subscribe to. And you can join our newsletter, fruitfest.co.uk, to get announcements about the Fruit Festival, about other podcasts, about online events that we're doing, and other free resources that we will provide you to help with changing to this raw vegan type of lifestyle and getting this information out to more people. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening and watching. Raphael, speak to you soon and look forward to seeing you.
Yes. See ya.